It's a scene that we have seen many times before, recreated in nativity sets or in stories, in books that we've read, paintings and pictures that have been made. That stable, Mary and Joseph, the manger, and the baby, the Messiah, the Christ. But as we, as a church, have been journeying through Advent, we've gotten closer and closer to this day, looking at and noting all of the unexpected ways that the Messiah comes to us. We've seen some of those examples in the family tree of Jesus, as we've traced the examples of the five women that appear in that genealogy and the unexpected things that they bring to the story. And that happens for us as well. Today we get to the last one of those five women in that story and see how the unexpected Messiah arrives through an unexpected mother, Mary. Hear then these words from Luke chapter 1. In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Don't be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you will call him Jesus. He will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I am still a virgin." The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age, and she who was said to be unable to conceive is in her sixth month. For no word from God will ever fail." "I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May your word to me be fulfilled." Then the angel left her. If I were to create a resume for the Messiah, I mean, if that were a job opening, right? So if I were to imagine that the religious officials in Israel at the time had an HR department, said, "Hey, we need to fill this position of Messiah. Let's start taking in applications. Let's start interviewing candidates." And then this resume comes in for Jesus. And what stands out on that resume? What are the credentials that come forward in this? Right? If you think through what the interview process might be and some of the questions that may come along the lines of that. So if you get the job here, if you become the Messiah, tell me how that works. In fact, give me priority. What's the first thing you're going to be the first thing that you will do? Well, first thing I think is that I'm going to be born when my family is homeless in this little shepherd town. Oh, and from there, I think my family's going to become political refugees. We're actually going to have to run for our lives and escape and spend a few years in another country that's not ours as refugees. But eventually we'll come back, you know, and when we come back, my family's from Nazareth, so we'll go and we'll live in Nazareth, the place where my family's from. Nazareth. Where's that again? I'm not familiar. It's in Galilee. Galilee. Is that somewhere near Iowa? I never heard of it. It sounds remote and nowhere. tell you what, we'll hang on to this resume and don't call us, we'll call you, right? There's something about this whole picture that's just wrong. Wrong from the start. That doesn't fit the expectation of what the Messiah was supposed to be. So we read this story here today of the angel Gabriel, the messenger who comes and announces the birth of the Messiah. This is actually the second birth announcement that Gabriel gives. In fact, I think if I were to write that story a little differently, the first birth announcement is a little closer to what maybe actually should have happened. We read the story beginning at verse 26 in Luke 1, but if you were to back it up, the story actually begins then with the angel Gabriel going to Elizabeth to announce the birth of John the Baptist. Elizabeth is married to a man named Zechariah. Zechariah is a priest who works in the temple in Jerusalem. The temple in Jerusalem, the center of everything in the religious community. That's where God resided. It seems to me, anyway, that if we're going to be talking about a Messiah who comes from God, then we ought to be talking about the place where God dwells, the temple, Jerusalem. That's a better candidate for the job right there. Because we all know that God in Jerusalem is where the Messiah will come from, and the king resides in Jerusalem. David made his residence in Jerusalem. That's where this great king, this Messiah, should come from. I like that announcement better. Let's go with that. But that's not the way it unfolds. That's not the way it comes to us. Consider the differences then. Consider the contrast between these birth announcements, these two events. John the Baptist, the one who comes to prepare the way for the Messiah, starts out in the center of everything, starts out in Jerusalem, starts out in the place you would expect. But as John's life unfolds, John is the one who then moves out. Leaves Jerusalem, leaves the center of everything, and John actually then travels out to the wilderness, to the countryside, by the Jordan River. And the Bible tells us then that the people go out to him. You see, it's a reversal that we're starting to see take place, a reversal that I did not expect, right? I expected something of Messiah to be more of a top-down event, kind of a trickle-down salvation, right? I mean, if you know economics at all and think of anything of trickle-down economics, you start at the top and then it works its way down from there, and eventually everybody is included, but you go from the top down. Let's start in Jerusalem, the place that we expect it, and let it spread from there. But it doesn't go that way, does it? In preparing for the Messiah, John leaves the center, leaves Jerusalem. And the people who are searching for the Messiah, searching for God's salvation, leave the center. They leave Jerusalem. They go out to find where John is. And then comes Jesus. This guy from Nazareth, whoever heard of this place? Ordinary, right? As ordinary could be. From as ordinary a family as ordinary could be. The angel Gabriel comes to Mary, and Mary is the last person I would expect to be in this story. Because she is such an ordinary girl. Just like everybody else. Just like, in some ways, you and I. And maybe that's the point. That Jesus comes to the ordinary. And then Jesus, as he begins then, not from the top down, not from the center going out, but Jesus, who begins from the outside, who begins from the bottom, who begins from the ordinary, the plain, the everyday. And Jesus, who then travels towards the center, whose life and whose ministry becomes something that moves towards Jerusalem, who doesn't start with the top of where God is and then trickle it down to the people, but instead comes down to the ordinary people and brings the people up to God. That's an unexpected story that comes with some unexpected credentials along the way. When Gabriel comes to Mary, who I'm sure was thinking, why me? Why me? But God chooses the most ordinary of people for his plan of redemption in the world to show us that God chooses the most ordinary of people for his plan of redemption in the world. And he still does that today. So when we think of the power of Christmas and we think of everything that Christmas means to us, we remember all that it means for Jesus to redeem and restore a lost and a broken world. And maybe it feels a little bit overwhelming, this whole mission that comes from God to the world through Jesus. The mission that Jesus passed on to his disciples, which becomes the mission of the church, which we are a part of. A world that still looks to me like it's pretty dark. There's a lot of messed up things in our world around us. There's a lot of broken things in our own lives. Jesus came into a dark world, and I still see some darkness in that world around me. And it can feel a little overwhelming to where maybe in that moment, like Mary, I might back up and say, yes, okay, sure, God, I believe. I believe and I have faith and I'm a Christian, but it's a little overwhelming. You know, the mission that you've given for the church and for Christians in this world, it's a little overwhelming, and sometimes I may have to back up and say, why me? I mean, what do I have? What are my credentials? What do I offer? I'm just ordinary. I don't have all the things to go on that maybe I would think about. Right? I'm not a person of nobility or high rank in my family. I'm not some kind of religious scholar who can know and understand and explain all things. I don't have extraordinary wealth that I have all of these resources that I can use. You see, I'm just so plain. So why me? Why us? But Mary does not respond to Gabriel with some kind of list then, right? Mary does not come back and say, you know what, I think you got the wrong person. I think you should go for somebody else. Mary does not come back and negotiate on this, right? She does not come back with some list of conditions to be met. She does not come back to Gabriel with a counteroffer of some kind, or she does not come with a contract of obligations that needs to be fulfilled in order for her to take on what Gabriel brings as the message for her. She doesn't do any of that. Mary reminds us that the family of God is for everyone. It's for people like you, people like me, for ordinary people. God is looking for people who simply respond, I am the Lord's servant. Right, that's the only credential that counted here. That's the only thing that mattered. The people of Israel at that time, they were looking for someone who was going to be like David, right? The great King David, the one who brought unity among all the tribes and the one who conquered all of their enemies. But I think they forgot something about David as well. You see, because when David came along, before David, Saul was king, In Samuel, the prophet is sent out to Bethlehem to find the house of Jesse to anoint the next king. And that story goes that when Samuel goes there, Jesse gathers all of his sons there and lines them up, and Samuel starts going down the line, and every single one of them, God says, nope, not that one, not that one, not that one, all the way down till there's none left. And Samuel has to say to Jesse, is that it? Well, okay, no, there's one more. We got the kid David, but he's not here. I'm sure you don't want him, right? He's out taking care of sheep. We didn't even bother to bring him because, yeah, not him. But guess what? He was the one. This whole pattern that God has of choosing the unexpected is something that he does over and over and over again. Coming from the plain, the ordinary, the people who maybe think they don't have anything to offer, except for the one thing that matters most. A heart like Mary, which simply says, I am the Lord's servant. And that's where we find ourselves today. We find ourselves in this scene, on a dark night, in this dark stable, with an unexpected Messiah who comes in ordinary ways to ordinary people because he comes to us. He comes for us, and he comes to redeem us. So it started on that dark night, that there was, in that darkness, a single light. A single light that came into the world. A single light that, for us, represents the light of Christ. And that light then would spread to the whole world. Would you join me in prayer?